Joining us, big friend of the show, ESPN Golf's own Jason Sobel. Jason, what's going on?
Good morning, guys. Doing well. How are you guys doing?
Doing good. Unbelievable. There's been no like rain to hold up the event at the Memorial so far. I mean, what is going on? Did Nicklaus put up a bubble?
No, I'll tell you exactly what it was. This is probably the first Memorial tournament that I've missed in about 10 years, and so they don't have any rain at all.
Oh, so it's your fault.
It has been all my fault all these years, and I stayed away in perfect weather.
So, what do you think about what's going on up there? Jason Duffner, minus 14, leading by 5. I mean, and I like Fat Duff better than Skinny Duff, so I'm all about this. And yesterday was National Donut Day, so there's a serendipity here. Can he keep it going through the weekend?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if he can keep these 65s going, but yeah, I think he'll play well through the weekend. Certainly he's a player to beat right now. He's been trending in the right direction. He likes Memorial. He plays well on that golf course. And I don't know, it sort of feels about right for Duffner to start coming back. These things are cyclical. He had some little downturn in his game, wasn't playing his best, but now he's back to maybe the Duffner who won the PGA Championship 4 years ago, and maybe we see a guy sort of returning to maybe not the elite in the game, but at least maybe second or third tier, which is certainly in his capabilities.
Yeah, I mean, while no one else has gone 65-65, yesterday was a scoring day for a lot of these guys. We saw a lot of movement on the leaderboard. Graham Dillette, you know, shaved six or seven strokes off. Bubba Watson moved up. Some of the bigger names, Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, they didn't play as well yesterday as they did, but they're still sitting T4. Who is still in this? I mean, at minus 14, it can't be over. Duffner's going to have to back up to the field a little bit. But are these guys who are sitting at minus 4, I mean, 10 strokes on the weekend, if Duffner only backs up 2, is it possible?
Yeah, that's still possible, I think. 10's a lot, but yeah, you look at Duffner and say, okay, if he shoots 73-73 on the weekend, then, you know, that might even be asking a little bit much for a guy that just won 65-65. I don't know that he's going to go that high. But if he does, and if he's 2 over and 12 is the target score, then a guy who's 4 under just has to go 68-68, yeah, certainly possible. I think that those guys are still very much in the mix. We're going to see the thing shake up a lot today, I think. And, you know, as you guys know, it's never over going into the weekend. So even though Duffner's got a big lead right now, it's kind of all on him. If he goes out and shoots another 65, yeah, okay, tomorrow could be a coronation. But if he shoots anything right around par, that brings a whole lot of guys back into that mix.
Yeah, I mean, you've been around these guys for a long time on tour. You have private conversations with them in addition to the things that you report on. What's the attitude going into a weekend when you've got a guy going 65-65? I mean, and it's not necessarily like a Tiger Woods who you feel maybe we can't ever catch. What's the attitude within the top, say, 10 or 12 spots when a guy has such a big lead going into the weekend?
You know, I think guys actually like that position. They like the fact that, hey, I'm not supposed to go catch this guy, so I can go out there, have a little smile on my face, have some fun, go play some pretty good golf and be aggressive and see what happens. I think they'd almost rather that than, hey, I've got a one or two shot lead going into the weekend. Now it's on me, all that focus, to go out there and maintain that lead. I don't know that anyone, you know, like we said, 10 shots out of the lead thinks they're out of it right now. And all that pressure, all that focus is on Jason Duffner right now. And if he doesn't get it done, it's on him. But if another guy comes from behind and is able to catch him and get past him tomorrow, that looks like just gravy right now. It looks like you know, something that nobody is expecting, and nobody has the focus on those players. So, I think they actually like this position.
Again, Jason Sobel of ESPN Golf joining us. And as we are only a couple weeks away from the U.S. Open, Dustin Johnson hasn't seemed to have been the same since the slip at the Masters that cost him playing in that event. And Jordan Spieth is on the leaderboard, was at the top of the leaderboard again last week. Is he back? Because I sit here and I look at stats, and I don't see stats that tell me that he's back. I just see him gutting things out during rounds to kind of get to where he has been on the leaderboard. So what do you see out of these two players as we're gaining on the U.S. Open?
Well, first, as far as Jordan Spieth, I don't know if stats ever tell the story for Jordan Spieth. I think that he's a guy that does gut it out. He's a guy that, you know, doesn't look as effortless as Dustin Johnson or as powerful as Rory McIlroy or even as in control as Jason Day when Jason's playing his best golf. And yet, he's always right there around the leaderboard. That old saying, he knows how to get the ball into the hole. There's no stat for that, really. I don't know how you'd actually value that or measure that, but that's exactly what he does. And it's a testament to him, and, you know, he actually takes offense to it. If he heard me saying that, he'd, you know, he'd wrinkle his nose and he'd get a little mad at that because he is a very, very good ball striker. He's an elite ball striker. We all know he's an elite putter, although his putting stats are down a little bit this year. He's gone back and forth with that putter in his hands, you know, the exact putter that he's using. So I think Jordan Spieth is in a very good position right now going towards the U.S. Open. And I'd say the same thing about Dustin Johnson. Look, he's either just had or is just about to have his second child, and he's got a lot of things going on. I spoke with Dustin for a while at the Byron Nelson Championship when I was there a couple weeks ago, and I think he's in a very good frame of mind right now. I wouldn't think that missing the cut here at the Memorial is going to affect him very much. Remember, when he won the U.S. Open last year, if I'm remembering correctly, he had a little bad run right before that, too, and 2 years ago, almost won a Chambers bet. I think he withdrew the week before in Memphis. So he's not a guy where he needs to get some momentum going into a major championship to go out there and play well.
What are you hearing out of the players that have gone out and taken a look at Erin Hills? I mean, we saw Wes Bryan with a little video earlier this week that was like, fairway, two paces of rough, drop the ball, 2-foot-high fescue grass. I mean, are the players saying good things or bad things, or is it all going to depend on how accurate they are off the tee as to what they have to say about the golf course?
I still don't feel like a lot of the players know it very well. I spoke with Spieth, actually, a couple weeks ago about Erin Hills. He played in the U.S. Amateur there, I believe, in 2011. And he said he didn't really remember much. He remembered the last couple of holes. I don't know if that's the mark of a maybe below-average championship golf course if a player has played a handful of rounds there and doesn't really remember them 6 years later. But he doesn't remember much about it, but he's not too worried about it. Dustin Johnson, like I said, I spoke with him as well. He said he's never even seen it before. That video from Wes Bryan, I will remind people that the thickest the rough will ever be on a championship golf course is 2 or 3 weeks beforehand, because what the organizing committee will do is tell the course, don't touch the rough, let it grow as much as possible, let it get as thick as possible, and a couple days before the tournament starts, we're going to come in and we're going to mow it to the exact specifications that we would like. So it's going to be thicker 2 weeks ahead of time than it will be U.S. Open week. Doesn't mean it won't still be thick U.S. Open week. Doesn't mean it still won't have that fescue that he dropped the ball into. But let's wait and see exactly what that looks like during tournament week before we get too bent out of shape.
Yeah, I mean, and the organizing committee is, you know, it seems they're willing to give these younger courses that maybe the players don't have a lot of experience on a chance. I mean, this one, I think, was built, in 2011? So it's a very young course. And as you look at this layout, even if they bring the rough down a bit, I'm curious about guys like Mickelson and Bubba Watson and, you know, guys whose trajectory off the tee tends to be more interesting, nuanced, we'll call it. could this prove to be one of those courses that if you can't keep it in the fairway, because you can't hit it from another fairway, that doesn't seem to exist either. If you can't keep it in the fairway, you're going to be there 2 days.
Yeah, I think you'd probably say that about most U.S. Open courses, and yet, again, I'm going to go back to this conversation I had with Dustin Johnson. I asked him if he was surprised about winning the U.S. Open last year, just because it's a defense wins championships kind of tournament where you bring in a whole lot of offense, that's usually not going to work at a U.S. Open as much as it would at, say, a PGA championship. And he said, because he hits the ball a long way, he's able to play more defense. He's able to take driver out of his hands more and hit a 4-iron, whereas other guys are hitting driver or a 3-wood. So I think we tend to overrate just the impact that has on the bigger hitters. I think if you're a big hitter, if you're a powerful guy, you can succeed on any golf course. We saw that last week, John Rahm playing really well at Colonial. I would have never thought that golf course would suit his game. But again, he can go out there and hit clubs off the tee that other players aren't able to hit because they have to get it to a certain distance. So I don't know exactly who it favors, but I will err on the side of the powerful players always have an advantage. If you're Dustin Johnson, if you're John Rahm, if you're Rory McIlroy, if he is indeed healthy, you always have an advantage, even if you're not hitting driver off the tee, just because, look, if it means driver for half the field and you can hit a 3-iron, 4-iron, a hybrid into some of these fairways, that's going to be an advantage. You're going to be able to hit those more accurately than the drivers.
Again, talking with ESPN Golf's Jason Sobel. And Jason, you know, we have to touch on it. Tiger Woods this week, you know, pulled over, well, actually fell asleep at the wheel, sitting on the side of the road. I guess there's good news, bad news. The good news is there was no alcohol involved. The bad news is there was no alcohol involved. It was probably medication and pill related. So obviously we start to go down the path of maybe there is a problem after all of these surgeries and all this pain and all the injuries he's had. Has it all piled up on him finally?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it's still speculation. I have a problem with saying that, you know, Tiger needs to go get help or Tiger needs to find some sort of rehab or treatment for whatever is bothering him right now. Because until Tiger comes out and says that he has some sort of problem, really right now all he's admitted to was a bad reaction to prescription drugs. So if indeed this is a one-time thing, then maybe it's just a one-time thing and it won't bother him, and you know he can move forward from this. I will say that there's obviously a great deal of embarrassment from Tiger Woods after that 2009 scandal. He didn't win again for 2 years. He was healthy, and yet he was humiliated. I think that being in the public eye really affected him. And I just wonder if and when he comes back to playing professional golf at some point, are the memories of that mugshot all over the internet and that dash cam video and the breathalyzer video, are those going to be haunting him and maybe impact him even more so than the back surgeries and trying to get his swing right? Is that what's going to ultimately keep him from playing golf going forward?
Yeah, I mean, for me, the dash cam video was really hard to watch. Although I will say, as an aside, the officers involved, the patients and the professionals when they showed in dealing with it was really remarkable. They did a great job. But you talk about the embarrassment. I'm afraid that the embarrassment of the dash cam and the mugshot could be compounded by the embarrassment of just not really paying attention when it comes to taking medication. It's easy to find yourself in a position where you're trying to, you know, find relief, and you're not really paying attention to what it says on the bottles, and you're not really paying attention to the combination. Maybe you have more than one doctor advising you and that kind of thing. And for a guy who prides himself on, you know, showing such restraint in other parts of his life and things like that, there's a lot left to this story, isn't there, Jason?
I think so, which is why it's so hard right now to comment on it. Are we supposed to feel sympathy for him, or are we supposed to be angry at him? I don't know yet. I don't know if there's a definitive answer. And quite frankly, the way Tiger controls his news cycle, I'm not sure that we'll find an exact answer to that. I'm not sure that he'll ever let us in and peel back that curtain and tell us exactly whether this was an ongoing issue for him or a one-time deal. So one thing you did touch on, and I will say I was down Jupiter reporting on this story for a little bit this week, and I completely agree about the police officers down in Jupiter basically crossing every T and dotting every I. They were unbelievable. I read that entire police report. I mean, down to little details like Tiger's shoe was untied, so they asked Tiger to tie his shoe, and then he put his foot on the bumper, and he tried to tie his shoe, and his shoe wouldn't tie, so he took his shoes off. I mean, they did not miss a thing. It's like they knew exactly who was asleep behind the wheel. They knew it was Tiger Woods. They knew it would be a big story. They called in for backup, and they made sure that they got everything right so nothing would be questioned. So a very commendable job by them.
Well, Jason, man, well, I guess the memorial appreciates that you're not there for the weather, and and we appreciate you coming on with us, and we look forward to catching up with you again soon.
I'm sure Jack Nicklaus is listening right now, and for Jack, you're welcome.
Exactly. Thanks a lot, man.
Thanks, guys.